Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
One of them almost destroyed the printer this morning.
Oh, good
That's
Lord.
Another story.
Good morning, Hezzy.
It's the problem of having your own
cars,
in your house.
This show is about cars,
and
not about home offices.
And life.
Good morning, Hezzy. Good morning, listeners.
Good morning.
I hope that it's cool and lovely in New York because it's hot here in Pinehurst, North Carolina, but...
It's only going to be 89 today.
Oh, well, that's good.
As opposed to 97 that it was yesterday.
We've had a couple of weeks of beastly hot weather. But, you know, here in the Sandhills of North Carolina, which is 2 hours west of the ocean and where, you know, Wilmington and the coast, Pinehurst, eons ago, used to be waterfront property. It used to be oceanfront property. Then the earth changed.
Uh-huh.
But our soil is actually white sand. And as a result, which is wonderful, actually, in very hot weather because we don't have the humidity.
Makes for great sand traps on the
golf courses.
Yeah, don't have to bring in the sand. Sorry.
on Pinehurst's 42 golf courses. But really, how are you today, Hezzy? How are our listeners? I hope you're all well.
I think our listeners are all well, especially if they're tuned in. So, and they're probably with bated breath awaiting your review because
of the 2022 of the 2022 Sorento X Line SX Prestige all wheel drive SUV, a medium sized SUV,
which was quite big actually,
which was wonderful.
Yeah.
We were just thrilled with this vehicle. It was beautifully designed, beautifully engineered. We're going to talk about it now. Johnny, do you want to start?
The worst thing about this vehicle, this is so silly, but it was a very gray outside. I mean, it's a gray exterior, gray color.
Mm.
And it had a tan interior. Anybody knows gray and tan don't go together. So it wasn't really thought out about it. And this is the top-of-the-line model. Of course, if they had put black in it, which was probably go with gray, it would have been unbelievably hot to try to get into and get it started and stuff.
I cannot believe, out of all the wonderful things,
I thought I'd get the bad stuff out of the way to begin with.
That you're going to get hung up on the color.
Hey, I'm driving in this car. People look at me. You got to have, some
people look
street
at you.
Credentials.
Oh, there's John Wilde. The thing is that when you realize the name of the gray paint was called Wolf Gray,
Wolf
you might
gray.
Feel better about the fact that they would say, look, there's that Wolf John Wilde. I don't know. But the interior of the car was black. The outside was wolf.
No, the interior was tan.
Well, it was supposed to have been black.
I agree with you. That's what it says on the Maroni. But the interior of that vehicle was the tan color, which I liked. I mean, I love the tan color on the inside.
Well, next time we'll have them give you a different color.
Okay.
But the thing is, we'll talk about one of the big drum roll things we always talk about with, as toward the end of the show, we might as well get it right out there now. Yes, Wolf Gray paint is an option. $445.
As were the?
Oh, wait a minute. That X-Line interior, which was called the Rust Interior Package, that was, that camo color was actually an extra. And then, Hezzy, you want to answer?
It wasn't camo, it was tan.
You want to answer, Hezzy, the last of the three options?
Oh, I don't have the right number in front of me, but I remember that there was an extra. I don't know where this thing comes from, but there's somebody who's infatuated with carpets.
Yeah.
I don't know. It must be something going on with carpets.
They have a fetish. It's true.
Remember when you used to go to the car dealer and he'd say, what do I have to do to make a deal? And you would say,
throw the floor mats in.
Yeah, that's it. He would say, all right, well, Well, just throw in the floor mats. You don't have to pay for those.
Well, then maybe we
don't feel like you won something.
Maybe people got hung up on that. Maybe the dealers got hung up on that. But the point is that those are the only extras on this vehicle, something shy of $1,000. Those are the only three extras for a vehicle that fully loaded with the floor mats is just a tad over $45,000. What bang for your buck?
Well, back up.
Well, you know what?
Actually,
I asked you one question. When you go buy that car, is there something visceral that happens when you say, is there any other luxury item I could put into the car? And say,
no.
Well, you know, you could put in, you know, the floor mats. And,
oh, right, right.
You know,
so, yeah, the floor.
And then everybody goes crazy. And they say, oh, let me do that. Let's put that in there because it's so important. But I think when you drive the car, you must feel that. You know, that,
you know,
hey,
Johnny,
I got these fantastic floor mats.
You know, Johnny, I just had a brilliant idea.
Okay, I'm ready.
For Hanukkah, we're gonna get Hezzy some floor mats, even though he doesn't, you know, drive or anything like that. He could put it in his.
I'll use
it. His office and see what
have
him under
his,
what is the big deal.
Whenever we have our show, he could put the car floor mats under his desk so that, you know, we're on.
I like
we're
that.
We really like.
You are
really
so feel
the luxury
so
item.
Wonderful. So thoughtful. I can't stand it.
Yeah, we're gonna do this, Johnny. Let's do it then, so that we can wrap it up now and have it ready for Hanukkah.
Okay.
So anyway, so even if you didn't have the floor mats and this wolf gray paint with the X-Line rust interior package, then you're talking about pennies below $44,000 again for an amazing vehicle. And the thing that really struck me about this vehicle lately, we've seen. SUVs especially, and trucks most especially, that look like they've been pumped with testosterone. They're really bulgy, really designed. They make a statement. But this car does not. I mean, it does make a statement, but it's graceful. It's beautifully designed. It's fluid. It's aerodynamic. It's got a very special front grille that is at one with the vehicle, but the fact is it's not like some cars that you see where the grill is a statement. This just seems to be part and parcel of a beautifully designed chassis. And so when you look at this car,
and if you read the article, you'll see the car.
Yes, and then also the wheels are beautiful. The top of the car is excellent because it's wide enough that the windows are deep. In other words, sometimes we're seeing in car design to look streamlined, they'll make the top to the bottom, the width, or the height of the window, they'll narrow it. And that prevents you from turning around and seeing if anybody's coming up over your right-hand shoulder if you're driving. And although that sounds antiquated because today, of course, all of the technology, you can see what's coming on either side of you, behind you, in front of you, you know, through the you know, instruments that the cars have. But back in the day when Johnny and I, you know, and you, Hezzy, first took driving lessons, none of that existed, and you had to look over your shoulder to see if a car was coming up from behind. So that's something that I've never outgrown. I always, even despite the instrument panel, I'll look over my right shoulder. And the point is that with this vehicle, the windows are just, they're lovely. They're super, super panoramic. There's also what do you call it, Johnny? The sky
sunroof.
Sunroof, the sky roof, the sunroof, whatever. It's a light, it's airy, it's a breezy, it's a beautiful car. Johnny, why don't you say something about it?
First of all, let me say, listeners, I think my wife had way too much
coffee
this
morning.
She is wound up.
Wound up here, but loved the car. Wound up over the Sorento X-Line SX Prestige all-wheel drive. Go ahead, Johnny.
Phew. I wanted to go back to when you were talking about. Oh, no kidding. And there's a reason for that, and that's one of the things I was going to talk about. The Prestige has a number, Sorento has a number of models. And the first one is an LX. It starts at $29,590, so let's say $30,000. And then they have then as you move up the line, they all get more expensive, but they all have more things. And that was why I think I gave the website to go, because you can do a comparison of all these. So it starts at $30,000. Ours, actually, if you don't include the shipping charges, you know, and all that stuff that they have at the bottom, you can include the floor mats. But it has a sticker price of $43,090. So between $30,000 and basically $43,000, which is $13,000, you have, first you start with the LX, then you get the S, then you get the X-Line S all-wheel drive. You can see how they're adding things. Then you get the EX, then you get the X-Line EX all-wheel drive. Okay, so that's like a two versions of the second model. Then you get the SX, then you get the SX Prestige, and then you get the X-Line SX Prestige all-wheel drive. So you can see that there are models that they have, so they're adding things to change the pricing and give you more things. But Lori was correct. If you can buy a model like this that has virtually everything on it, except floor mats, but you can buy one that has virtually everything on it for $43,000, it's a good deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, for any car, $43,000 is pretty much within the realm of any middle-class person who needs this kind of a vehicle. I really like what both Hyundai and Kia, who are kind of sisters in this thing, have done. And, of course, this is the Kia. The Maroni on this car, and included the floor mats and all the rest of this, had it at $43,900. So $44,000. So let's $14,000 difference. And I think the reason the Maroni was higher than the sticker price that they list at $41,000 is because of some of the inflation things that we're dealing with. The cost of transporting anything has gone way up.
Yeah.
I know because I'm in another business which involves leather and leather and canvas goods, and the cost of shipping things from overseas to here is really half the cost of the product that you buy. So when I buy something overseas, I have to figure out that it's going to be at least 50% of that cost is also going to be added in for shipping. So shipping has gotten really out of hand. Anyway, that's another thing. But I'll tell you one of the things I really, really liked about this vehicle, and it was unusual. It has a 2.5 turbo four-cylinder engine, 281 horsepower, 311 foot-pounds torque. We have a lot of vehicles. You know, a lot of the vehicles we get have four cylinders in them. And what's the number one thing I usually bring up about four cylinders? You step down on it.
Glad to.
The four chipmunks have to talk to one another. This didn't have that. It is the first time I've had an SUV with a four-cylinder, even with turbos, this is the first time I've had a four-cylinder engine that when you step down on the gas, there was almost the immediate response, very much like we got with the electric cars. How they've done that, I don't know. But I am telling you that it was different than driving other four-cylinder cars. That was a big plus for me. Because you do a lot of course, stop-and-go type traffic, but also if you're getting on any kind of a highway where you are on a ramp moving into traffic and stuff, you want to know that your vehicle can slide into traffic without that lag time thing. It's just really, I really thought that was excellent on this car. And I called it a spunky engine, but it also gets 27 miles to the gallon on the highway, 22 miles to the gallon in town for a 24 miles per gallon average. And I thought that was fine. You're talking about an SUV. This is not a little vehicle. They call it a midsize, but it's as big as bigger than my Ford Edge. And I love the Edge. I mean, for size-wise, you can get an awful lot of stuff in it. And you could in this Sorento, too, which also... One of the big things that raised the price in this vehicle is it had three rows of seating. So it had three rows of seating, and if you put both of those rows of seating down, you have an enormous, I think it was 70-some cubic feet of space to put things. It's an enormous amount of space to carry things, which we're carrying a lot of things back and forth to our storage unit because we have more stuff, as George Carlin used to say, we have more stuff than we have place to put stuff, so we had to get a storage unit to put our stuff in. Anyway, vehicles like that, like this, are excellent for either families or for, you know, I used to drive mine because I went up and down the road doing shows. It's for carrying things that are important that you want to keep dry, but you need to move them from one place to the next. Let's see what else.
But one thing I want to mention is that you can have a third row. There's the option of a third row in this vehicle. And
it was in the vehicle. We actually had three rows.
Yeah, we had three rows. It seats normally five and then storage, but this was seven and still storage behind the third row. And the one thing that really struck me was it was still roomy. I mean, oftentimes you'll see a third row in a SUV, especially a midsize SUV, where you've got to either be a child or you've got to be really, you know, kind of tiny.
I think that was still the case in this one.
No, I you know why I don't agree with you, and that's because the two middle seats were open to the back, so you had the, you know, easy way to walk
through
between.
Yeah.
And that gives the people that are in the third seat much more leg room than otherwise when you've got a
place to put their leg.
Put their legs. But if you have a family with five young children, as our son Winston and his wife Leah do, this is a wonderful family car, especially since it's all-wheel drive, and especially if, like them, you live in the North Country.
Well, and also has a great warranty, all of those things that we've come to expect on those cars. You're talking about the seating, or the first row and the second row of seating were heated. The first row, the driver and passenger's seat, were also what they call, they don't call it air conditioned, ventilated. They call it ventilated, but it was basically air conditioning. I know, and that was very helpful for the week that we drove it. It was very hot here. You had the start and stop, so that when you stop, the engine would turn off, but there was just a button right to your right hand. You push the button, and the engine stayed on if you don't like that
particular
feature.
And that's a feature that's aggravating to me and Johnny as well, because what happens is, you stop for a light, and then it's totally silent. You don't know if it's going to start up again. And I remember when I used to drive a stick shift in the middle of Manhattan, that I would, of course, have my foot on the brake and on the clutch at the same time. And then you know how on the east side, especially as you're coming off FDR Drive, the street kind of rises as you're going into the 70s. And when you're stopped there, especially on East 72nd Street, and in the old days when you would roll back, the instant you took your foot off of the brake and engaged the clutch, there's that moment of pure fear that, am I going to go back and hit the guy that's pulled up 2 inches behind me? And the thing is that that mode that you can put, this is a fully automatic car, but when you have the engine cut, when you're stopped for a light, that's the feeling I kept getting with this. So it's supposed to be a gas saver, and so with 27 miles per gallon highway and 22 city for an average 24, 25, I think we were getting on the high side of 25, 26, especially where gas prices are way north now of $5 a gallon, go figure.
Yep.
Gas is a big concern. So.
And yet it's the least thing that is involved in owning a vehicle.
Yes, it is.
Your insurance every month is more than the cost of gas.
Even at $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So, but let's talk more about the safety features, Johnny. You do that because that's your big thing.
Well, there's so many safety features on this that we've come to take for granted. But the one that I really noted, I didn't have to use it particularly, although it did happen while I was driving in cruise control, and that's they have this, it's called, it's something about curve, NSCC, that's it. It's called the Navigation-Based Smart Cruise Control Dash Curve, and it's referred to as NSCC. But what happens is when you put the car in cruise control, and again, they're advancing the cruise control capability. First of all, cruise control on this car recognizes speed limit signs. So if you're going in a 65 mile an hour down the highway and in a 65 mile an hour zone, and you have it on, you set the cruise control. If it sees the sign ahead that says you're going into a 55 mile an hour zone, it will slow your car down to 55 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's reading the signs. Didn't have that before. But this NSCC curve, when you are driving the car, and we talked to, you know, the course, it keeps you in the middle of the road and doesn't want you to get outside the lines, especially at least when you're in cruise control. And so it actually now is judging the curve in the road and will slow the vehicle down slightly or more depending on the severity of the curve. It's reading the road. Now, that's kind of a new thing because used to cruise control, it would just keep you go, but it didn't really, and it kept you in the center of the lane, if you understand, and it kept you in between the lines and kept you centered, but it didn't really slow down or do anything if you were going around a curve. Now it's starting to anticipate that the curve ahead is going to cause the car to go slower to keep you safer. That's new technology, and both of those things, this idea of speed limits, curves, and it had another thing that was really, really cool. That curve, that NSCC, if you are starting to turn left and it sees a car, it's now reading the car, a car approaching from the left, and it appears that that car is going to be in the way of your left-hand turn, it will stop you. This is new stuff. This is new stuff. And what it says to me, which we sort of talked a little bit about last week, but what it says to me is that car manufacturers are now looking to find things to keep you from getting into an accident as much as they are finding things to protect you if you're in an accident. And I think that's great technology. The second thing about all this was, this is one of those steps toward driven cars. The cars that now recognize the road, the cars that recognize the speed, the cars that recognize other cars approaching. If you're at a stop and you start to make a left-hand turn and somebody's coming, it stops you. This is now anticipating what other cars are doing. It's pretty high-level stuff that we're getting into as we move toward self-driving cars. So they're making some big advances. So it's interesting that these kind of advances are in vehicles that are made in South Korea. You know, this Kia is made in South Korea, so are Hyundai's. And Hyundai was the first one. I always tell the story, but the five cars that are in a line and the people who are driving them, four of them get out and jump on a truck next to them. And the fifth one keeps going, and all the cars are behind, and when the front one stops, they all stop. That was the first time we saw that kind of technology. And what was that, 10 years ago? Look at how far we've come with the safety features that have been developed to keep you out of an accident and protect you, the other ones that protect you when you're in an accident. So there's a lot going on out there that I think is really, really good.
One thing you have to remember, though, when you're driving a car like this is a very sure-footed car, all-wheel drive.
Yeah, right.
And it also has drive mode select with snow mode, which means that you can select the mode that you are that will conform with your weather conditions. So, but again, a word to the wise. I remember years and years ago, I was in Alaska on what they call a ride drive when one of the big car manufacturers had invited journalists from all over the world, you know, in small groups over the course of a month to test drive a new model car. And there were two gentlemen who had come up from New York. I don't remember what magazine they were with, but even if I did, I wouldn't say. And so here we're in Alaska, and we had a map that we had to follow. We were to set off from Anchorage, and we were to meet somewhere in Denali National Park for lunch. But these two gentlemen decided they were in Alaska, they were going to pursue great adventure. And so they went off the beaten path. This car was designed to do that. And it was an all-wheel drive vehicle. And so they went off the beaten path, and the road that they ended up on got narrower and narrower until it ended at a river. So they figured, now these were city dwellers, they figured that because it was all-wheel drive, they could drive across the river. Now, the river wasn't really very wide, but it was very deep, and it was also very choppy. It had white caps, so it was flowing at a fast rate, and so they went into the river. And I don't know how far the car went before it actually...
They should have been taken out of the gene pool.
Before it actually bottomed out on a big boulder in the middle of the river. They went downstream quite a ways, apparently, and of course they ruined the whole car. So the point of what I'm saying is you can have a car that's wonderful, like this is. It's designed for off-road, but off-road within reason. You don't want to take this vehicle into the back of Beyond. This vehicle is great for off-road driving, but not when the road ends, not when you're in very bad rocky terrain or very high altitude or where there's a huge, incline in the road you're going. You got to use reason. And likewise with the snow control, you've got to realize that, yes, this is great. It's snowing. You're going to put the car into gear that's going to make it downshift and much more manageable in snow conditions. That doesn't mean a foot of snow. And it also doesn't mean ice. It never means ice. You could be driving a tractor trailer truck and get on some black ice, and it doesn't matter how big your vehicle is or how sure-footed your vehicle is. You're on black ice, and it's going to take you wherever it wants to go. I mean, black ice is...
Two quick things. One, when I stopped driving four-wheel drive vehicles, when I understood that four-wheel drive will get you going, but it has nothing to do with getting you stopped.
Yeah.
So it's just like Laurie says, you can drive on snow and ice, you still have to stop, and it's not easy. And the second thing is, my partner in Maine, because I used to live in Maine, and when people would drive into camp and they'd have these new big four-wheel drive, all things added to it, winches and everything, and they would get out, and Michael would say, I really like your car. It'll take you a lot further, and you can still get stuck in it. So...
Well, Mike was a very good business partner, and he was also a very good
woodsman.
Yeah. So you were lucky that you had a good business partner like Mike.
Yep.
But I guess as we round out the half hour, let's say who's going to buy this car. And obviously this car is a fabulous family car, fabulous car for two people, empty nesters like Johnny and me who are active. We have a very aggressive sporting life. We do travel long distances. We drive long
distances.
What
is an aggressive sporting life? We watch TV at night, honey.
Well, yes, but when we go, like, to Illinois to go, hunting or something.
Yeah, three or four times a year, we get
driving,
crazy.
No, we would do a whole lot more than that. But the point is that this is going to suit your lifestyle if you've got children, if you've got dogs, dog crates, you travel, you like to drive, and it's also a tremendous local car. Is it a great
very
city car?
Very comfortable, very quiet.
And now, is it a great city car? It absolutely is. I mean, this is not a car that's going to take up two spaces in the underground parking garage. It's going to be very responsive to the stop-and-go that a city demands.
Well, and that's a good point, because when we were parking it at, like, the grocery store, it really fits between the lines. It does not hang over the lines anywhere. It was very well engineered for size.
So full marks on this wonderful vehicle, Hezzy, and anybody who... drives a car should look at it. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, if you
mark
it for an SUV, it's certainly one that you want.
And I do want to say that those second row seats are captain's chairs, which are really comfortable.
Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, Key did an amazing job designing this vehicle, full marks. And frankly, if we were in the market for one, I wouldn't hesitate to buy it. I really wouldn't. I just loved it.
One little safety thing.
I got to ask only one question.
when are you going to when are you going to build out the garage? Because I don't think you've got enough room.
We'll build out the garage
when we buy
a second home.
Yeah.
We'll just get one with a bigger garage. It's easier that way, Hezzy. Anyway, and as far as color, this car comes in green. It comes in 9 colors, but it also is one of the few cars that comes in a beautiful green, a forest green, and that with a that beautiful
tan interior.
That's my car.
Yeah.
All right, Johnny.
Yeah,
I guess it's time to say goodbye. Hezzy, have a wonderful week, listeners. Be safe. Be cool.
Next week we have a Toyota. No, it's not Toyota. Infiniti.
Yeah, we have an Infiniti.
Yeah, we have one of the Infiniti.
Cross between a
crossover.
And a
it's cool.
Four doors, the San Andreas.
And it's red.
And it's Johnny's Arrest Me Red.
So, yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about next week.
Have a good
week,
Kevin.
Be
careful. Everybody,
on the
have
road,
a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Be well.
Talk to you next week.
Be well.
Bye bye now.
You,
you too,
Thank
Hezzy.
You,
bye bye.
Thank you, John.
Right, love you.
All
bye-bye.
The best. Love you back. Bye. All these people are just the best. And now I see another best person, none other than Brian Harrod from Yonkers Newswire. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Hezzy. I just love your guests when I do this show and listen in to it. It's the most interesting thing, even though a lot of the features I don't think I would enjoy so much. You know, I'm being a reporter like yourself, I'm always looking at what could possibly go wrong. So this technology of where they just take over
too.
Your car, you know, I can just see if you're leasing a car and you're 2 days late on paying making the monthly payment, the car, you know, automatically locks the doors and takes you to the leasing agent, you know, or something along that line.
Very well expressed. I think
yes.
I think we need to do a second automotive review with you, just to be able to get a little reality in there at times.
You know, there was a story. If you don't mind, a funny story I heard one time. It's a more than a decade old story, but back when they were really going after the mob in New York City. And you saw all those prosecutions like a decade ago, you know, the John Gotti era kind of thing. One of the things I'd heard was a lot of the mobsters like driving Cadillacs. They're very patriotic, American-made Cadillacs. And all these Cadillacs had the OnStar systems. Even if you didn't turn on this OnStar system for, like, roadside assistance or subscribe to it, still could. It still had an active microphone in your car. And the FBI would get a warrant. OnStar would turn on the microphone. The people in the car had no idea, and they're just blabbing away about their business. And, you know, most of the blabbing away in a car ride is about nothing, you know, but every now and then there would be these juicy nuggets that would lead to things. So even back then, your car was potentially an eavesdropping tool.
Eavesdropping.
Now it's ridiculous with all the features. God only knows what. I guess it could just could make you stop at the side of the road if you're being chased, you know, kind of thing. I guess it'd be easy for police in the future, you know.
Amazing, you know, the technology has become so intrusive.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are oblivious to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what can be done anyway, even if you're aware of it.
I've kind of lost hope. It is what it is. Just got to what do people like to say now? It's kind of a new era or a new normal, or it's just things have changed, you know. But I guess eventually we'll get used to it and adapt.
Well, I think that's what's happening, and the technology. There's so many positive things to the technology, but there are also some negative aspects, and I don't think that we fully. Well, maybe some people do, but I don't think I fully comprehend the complexity of it all. And then people say, "Well, you know, if you travel on the straight and narrow, none of this should be a problem." But it's amazing how problems can somehow come about, and I even wonder if the technology is so succinct and so clear that you might get actually thrown into prison for the wrong reason.
Oh,
you just never know.
We live in a land of an awful lot of laws. So there's no way that you can have a person that actually hasn't violated something somewhere along the lines. At one time or another, it was just that there were so many people you never could track this. Then it was able to store all this, and then maybe you could search for it. You know, they always were good at, you know, if the Oklahoma City bombing or another tragedy happened in the country, they 3 days later they could trace everything back because they were just sucking all this data in, you know what I'm saying? And you know, it was a matter of just sorting it out. You know, Timothy McVeigh had to be almost shocked when, you know, this is him running the truck in Kansas, this is him here, this is him here, this is him here. But now with AI, it's probably possible in the near future that in real time or maybe anticipating something happening, maybe because they're sucking just data like no tomorrow, the text, the phone calls, this, you know. Before it was a problem, if somebody said, Hezzy, your show on the radio is just a bomb. I love that show, man. It's great. You know, bomb didn't help, you know. But now it's gotten so sophisticated, they can kind of tell if you're talking about a real bomb or, you know, that kind of an expression. So
very true.
It has its good aspects, and it has some creepy aspects, too. So,
unbelievable. It's very, very true. Well, we should tell people it was my deficiency. In order to be able to find the Newswire, the Yonkers Newswire, you just have to look it up in your search engine, put in Yonkers Newswire, and it'll take you to your website. So it's all online, and you cover a panoply of issues, and you send me a list of some of the things that are really very interesting. And one of the most interesting thing is that you noted was this Grubhub note that resulted in a hostage rescue. That's mind-boggling. You know, it didn't happen in Westchester. It happened in the Bronx. But what an exciting moment. Talk about technology.
Yeah, you know, it's I assume, I don't know exactly, but this lady was being held for days by a rapist. And she convinced him, you know, we're hungry, let's order some food. And she was going to text the order. And I guess on there is featured like any special instructions, like hold the ketchup or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Type of thing. And she kind of cryptically said, send the cops. And fortunately, the people there took it serious and not as a joke. And the NYPD showed up. And apparently this guy was another technology thing, was meeting women on dating apps and then ended up keeping them for a week or so. And I guess there was another case very similar they were able to link him to after rescuing her. So it's quite a they put this on their Facebook page, too. That's another kind of thing. Grubhub, this, what do they call it? I think it was Chipper Truck Cafe or something. They put this on their
Facebook page
here in Yonkers. Like, I guess the police notified them that they were able to help somebody, but they didn't tell them the details. Mm-hmm. So they put it up on their Facebook page. So an admin on my page had posted it. There was a nice story. A lady was having trouble, but they didn't know the extent of it. And it was because of this Grubhub thing. Then all of a sudden, national media and, you know, New York media started picking it up. And then Grubhub gave them a $5,000 reward, I guess, for the restaurant, kind of just for being for following through. So it's just
that's phenomenal. It really puts Grubhub on the front page.
Yes, you couldn't buy that kind of publicity.
And it is interesting because I think it needs to be told as well, because not because it's Grubhub, but just the fact that, hey, this is another opportunity that a lot of people may not even think about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so innocuous, seemingly so innocuous, that it's a great way of really reaching out when you can't do, you don't have any other option.
Yeah,
I think it's brilliant.
If you're in that kind of situation, there's not much you can do. I did hear of a story once. There was someone that was in the you know, kind of the old style, was thrown in a trunk, you know, that type of stuff. And they were able to, I assume they were tied or bound somehow, but I don't know how they did, with their teeth or whatever. They were able to pull the wiring for the taillights and the backlights of the car. you know, they disabled the brake lights and the running lights, and the car got pulled over by the police. So I guess this is the 21st century version of that, of you know, where you where you can have special instructions, you know, call the police, I'm being held, that kind of thing. So
amazing, really amazing. Wanted to ask you about something else, which you did also point out, that there was a Yonkers detectives ended up investigating what was happening in the Nodine Hill neighborhood, and there were a lot of issues there, and they called it Operation Elm Sweep. And yet, it's so interesting, we had a different police commissioner in the past, and the new police commissioner, he's only in there now, what, not even
couple
a month's
months.
Time?
Oh, I'm not even sure
and
exactly. But
is it already a couple of months?
Maybe a month and a half. Let's go with that. We'll split
okay.
the difference.
But whatever the case is, we never heard about these incidences going on in Nodine Hill. I mean, it was ridiculous. You know, when do we ever
tell
it the way it is?
They've taken 14 people off the streets. They're mostly gang members and drug dealers. And, you know, it doesn't take many people to terrorize a neighborhood or a community. You know, if you have 14 people all of a sudden show up on your block, they're ruling that block, you know what I'm saying? They're ruling that block and blocks around it. So kudos to the commissioner for already, you know, within the first 100 days or so of his of being appointed by the mayor, of taking 14 gang members off the street. So it looks like the police department is headed in the right direction.
Well, that would really be terrific, because I thought it was a failure in the past under the old administration.
Mm-hmm.
But he's no longer here, so we'll see what goes on. Wanted to ask you about something else, which I found really very disturbing. Certainly, I think Yonkers is celebrating the Juneteenth celebration with the opening of the enslaved African rain garden.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I was really shocked to hear that already there's been some people who've tried to, I don't know, to corrupt the statue. Where does this anger come from? What are people trying to say by all of this? I don't get it. It's a celebration of history. It goes back to 157 years ago, when supposedly the African American was emancipated in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But it took 2 years to get there.
These people were enslaved much, much before that, you know, here in Yonkers.
Oh, yeah.
Most people in Yonkers don't like to discuss. There are certain graveyards around Westchester County in the Hudson Valley where, you know, slaves were owned and in the city also. But it's easy to talk about slavery in another state, another community. It's not in your own.
Uh-huh.
And I would say, you know, it's just a shame. I don't know. It was very not clear what was written or how it was done. I don't know if it was like a gang tag, like this is our area in downtown that they wrote this, or if it was, you know, something hateful. And for it just to be attacked the night before ribbon cutting, you know, before everybody's going there, and especially on the subject matter, is just horrific, but it's just, what can you do? It's just
you know,
nature versus
I don't understand? What I don't understand is all these things happening on a consistent basis. There's so much hatred. There's so much bigotry. There's so much bias. There's so much animosity. There's so much going on that divides our society. Why is it that we are so stupid and not willing to go the extra distance? And why isn't there some sort of a camera that can oversee the rainforest and make sure that it's protected on a 24/7 basis, so that if anyone has the stupidity and the gall and the bias to do something like this, they should be arrested and pay unbelievable fines. And, you know, once we start to do what we're supposed to do, then we won't have these problems. I remember on Buena Vista Avenue, there was supposed to be an open area that was being used as a dumping ground. You know, people would drop off their chairs or their sofas and whatever. It was illegal to do that. And what was fascinating is that they created, there was a building to the north, and there was a building to the south. And so they created something that looked like a half moon shaped a bubble that was, in a sense, and it was an amber-colored cover that was supposed to hide a camera behind it. And it was supposed to give the impression that there was a camera and that the area would be overseen by this camera, and so that, and you were warned that there would be a $1,500 fine for dumping anything there. And guess what? It was the biggest con job there ever was. They put the bubble to make it seem that it was covering a camera, but there was no camera behind it. Can you imagine the stupidity that these people are to have done that?
Yeah.
And this is all supposed to be paid by city taxpayer money.
Did it deter people or no? Or just people just got wise to it?
Absolutely not. But there was nothing to deter because people realized there was nothing there at the end of the day.
I have a story about
because
you.
Because nobody got arrested.
I'm the king of old stories today. This is going back to the I guess it's like the early 90s. There was this idiot named Brian Herod, believe it or not. They had a book drop.
I've heard the name.
Yes. They had a book drop at the the Rye Free Reading Room. And he was responsible for taking care of that building as a contractor. And people would come and people would donate books into this big thing for a big annual book sale that they had. And it wasn't locked. It was kind of on the honor system. But it got to be where people were taking the books, you know, before the sale. You know, some people would drop off the books and another guy would come fill his car up with books. So this guy, this idiot, Brian Herod, ended up buying, I think back at that time, maybe like $30 or something, this fake closed-circuit television camera. It was made to look like a camera and mounted it up there to scare people off. And it worked, actually. People stopped. They got a little nervous with this big honking camera pointing down at it. And then, unfortunately, the city of Rye, city attorney, sent a letter that the camera had to be taken down because someone might rely on the fact that that was a working camera. And then maybe they would be running there for help or something happened. At least it's covered on the camera. And then find out later it wasn't a real camera, you know what I'm saying? So we took it down. But that was the But back then, a closed-circuit camera system could cost, $10,000. It was a big, fat deal, and you had to be putting in VHS tape and all this. Now it's people can do it for, you know, less than a couple $100 and have it go right up to the cloud 24 hours a day. So it's a different story.
True. But, very, very true.
But it lasted for about 40 days till the corporate council at the city of Rye just thought this might be a liability.
Well, I guess it could have been. That's very interesting. I wanted to ask you also about the Ukrainian Heritage Festival. Were you able to attend? Because of my condition, I wasn't able to go.
I've never went.
Okay.
I see it. We drive down by there an awful lot, so it's a big, bear-looking thing. And I've seen them scores of videos over the years of the dancing. I'm very impressed.
Dancing is beautiful.
These, local kids, with the costumes and the dancing and how authentic it is, how they keep their culture alive.
But I didn't think they were local. They're not local. I think they're from Canada.
I thought it was
heritage.
The local Ukrainian youth group.
I don't think we have them. Mm. Well, if they have, I've never heard people from Yonkers that are celebrated because of their Ukrainian heritage. There is, of course, the Ukrainian heritage, and we have a large Ukrainian population in Yonkers. Well, we did. I think the largest populations in the metropolitan area is Yonkers, as well as in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be also a very large population in downtown Manhattan, very, very much so. But the people who are the dancers usually come from Canada.
I see. Like I said, I've seen the videos. I've been in that church.
Uh-huh.
I've been invited for services or to meet someone. It's a beautiful church inside.
Beautiful
it's
church.
Circular.
Beautiful.
It's packed. Mm-hmm. The services I attended with the wife, it was a full house. They seem to be
mm-hmm.
a very active group. Over by where I live, there's
yeah.
a credit union for Ukrainians and a few
yes,
other little
mm-hmm.
Organizations. But beyond that, I know very little about it. I do know this year they used to save the money. They were saving it for the earned money from this festival for the church and for some of these Ukrainian nonprofits here in town. But this year I think they're sending
right.
it to help in the Ukraine, you know, help with the humanitarian crisis has been created there. So
yeah,
it's already, I think this, what is it now, like 120 some days maybe?
Over 100 some odd days.
Yeah.
It's come crunch time, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening. Well, the problem is that the Ukrainians don't have the ammunition to be able to fight off the Russians, and the Russians have been unbelievable. Putin has gone, I think he's gone berserk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's lost it mentally.
Yeah.
And he's so angry.
Looking to use force to attach this region back into what used to be the Soviet Union to reclaim it, and that's a big letdown. And in Syria, just wiping out whole towns seemed to work to terrorize people that way. But the Ukrainians, you can knock down their town, but they're still going to fight you. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to run. So
there was a time people forget because they don't know their history. Ukraine was independent. It was not part of Russia. Ukraine was also part of Poland. And people don't even understand that. It was all together. And
yes.
Polish and Ukrainian and Russian are very similar in language, similar in lifestyle, and so on and so forth. And look at the war. It was World War II that brought a lot of this stuff into the open. And it's just simply frightening. But now, you know, people have no clue what the hell is going on over there. But the thing that's really fascinating, and Russia is not being blamed for it very much, is that they're not permitting food that, like wheat and other foods that could be used for making bread, particularly in the Middle East and in Africa. They're using food as a weapon to kill people because there
mm-hmm.
isn't enough food.
Yes.
You know, so they're starving people all over the world. It's absolutely amazing. It's taking Europe a long time to get their act together.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Europe was ever intended to really be much of a bulwark against Russia, but they realize that they have to be, which is fascinating. And I read today that for the first time, Russian oil is being purchased to a greater degree by China, and China has replaced Russia over the use of Saudi Arabian oil.
Yes.
It's amazing, you know, how these people stick together because they've got a communist agenda, which is
yes.
fascinating. So
I saw that too. That was happening. It's not a huge country. It's about the size of Texas, but the resistance has been very strong, and the support from the U.S. has been very, very strong, which has helped. Unfortunately, I think Europe would just like to see a ceasefire and draw the lines there, kind of like a situation in North and South Korea. But to the Ukrainians' credit, they're looking to take that territory back, you know, that they lost previously. And they're looking to go all the way to the border. So it's it seems like they have the heart to do it. And I think in the end, it's going to...
That's the heart.
Yeah. I think in the end, it's going to be... this asymmetrical war, it'll be kind of disclosed later. There was an awful lot of help from the U.S., the CIA, and that type of stuff because of the trouble that Russia's made in the Middle East and their you know, threats and that type of stuff just to weaken them. I've seen estimates that Putin's lost 40% of his army in this thing, and he doesn't even have any more cruise missiles.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and it's he's poured an awful lot of resources into this, and pretty soon I think I don't know if Zelensky's on a secret U.S. ship off to the coast of there or some other base inside of Ukraine. Man, you know where they were talking about making all these deals for to send jets. I think that was more of a cover of for what these drones have been doing to the Russian tanks and army and divisions there. I think this is mostly drone activity, personally, but I'm not a military expert. You remember in Afghanistan, it's very easy in an asymmetrical warfare to just gum up the works like no tomorrow. I remember when they sent special forces into Afghanistan with lots of money, and they just rolled that whole country with these warlords one after another, and pretty much took Afghanistan with just a small contingent of U.S. advisors. But unfortunately, once you take a horrible situation like that, it's a lot different trying to govern it, hold it, and keep it intact, you know, when it's just a war zone like that. But and I think that's what Putin's finding now is just the U.S. is willing to pour in so much money and assistance that he needs a graceful way out of this situation because it's he may end up losing his seat of power over this, in my opinion. But
well, I hope so.
Yes,
he's not
well,
a good man.
Many do, I guess. But anyway,
I don't see it.
That's my analysis.
I really just don't see it.
Yeah,
I want to ask you something else, which is. Just came to light, this lawsuit against Stu Leonard, Stu Leonard Jr., regarding, with reference to black employees as being called thugs and the N-word. And I do remember the incident years ago where I knew that there were people, well, the property where Stu Leonard is built was at one time used as a Orthodox Jewish cemetery, and then they exhumed the bodies, or so they claimed, and then shipped them over to Israel for reburial. But I remember they were going to commemorate a plaque, which is the parking lot area of Costco. And that's where the burial site was. And what was fascinating is I 2 hours to get there. And I remember that I arrived there, and it was raining that day. And people were hiding out at the Costco. And I said, what are you doing over there? You know, this thing was supposed to get started. And I'm waiting there where the plaque is supposed to be. And they said that it was raining, so they decided to go there. And but they evidently had the ceremony. I said, what's wrong with you people? This was the beginning of where I understood the way Yonkers conducts its business. It's all bullshit. It's all a lie. It's all deceitful. And that's exactly what they did. And I can't believe that we've been hearing all the wonderful things about Stu Leonard and all the good stuff that they...
Oops.
Okay, Brian, I think, is already on the line. And we got disconnected at my end, so my apologies.
No problem.
So, what have you heard about this case against Stu Leonard Jr.?
Well, I was unaware of this
for so long.
I was new to Yonkers, so I was unaware of this Jewish cemetery being there. So it's been an eye opener for me. I had heard about the fire, that there was a Jewish community center, I guess in I want to say late '60s or something, that had caught fire, and some children
That's
and adults died in there, and they were buried there. And then I did notice. I don't know if you noticed, but before this, I guess Stu Leonard had an idea this was getting ready to come out in the open, this lawsuit. I assume they were doing. He got notice it was going to be filed. Because all of a sudden, the advertising for Stu Leonard has just went through the roof. You know what I'm saying? I'm opening up a paper, and there's a Stu Leonard ad inside of it for where I've never seen it before. And then there was this massive, when no one said, I can't get any baby formula. You know what I'm saying? Somehow Stu Leonard got baby formula for the stores in New Jersey, up in Connecticut, up in Danbury, here.
Uh-huh.
And then it was like a big publicity thing. Got the city of Yonkers, got the city of Norwalk, all these cities announcing they got baby formula available, you know, at a very cheap price. It's being flown in. And so there has been a publicity blitz ahead of this to kind of counter it. But it is shocking what this former employee revealed, that that there are probably still bodies in there of children, and that there was
it was interesting, too.
Such horrible language. Stu
Leonard's is not a Jewish operation.
No.
But the people who owned the property.
Yes.
And that where the burial site was there. Are called the Morris Brothers.
Yes.
And the Morris Brothers are the landlords of Stu Leonard's and Costco and Home Depot and all these other places. And interestingly enough, Yonkers worked out one of the cheapest deals ever. I don't think they pay very much for the property. In rental, we don't get very much out of it. I don't think they're even paying $350,000 a year.
Oh wow! I wasn't aware of this. Yes.
Yeah, this goes back many years. I think that my number in my mind is mentally correct. Maybe it's wrong. I don't know. These people have been somehow protected by the city for a very, very long time, and. That it should come out now because of Stu Leonard's alleged demeanor with regard to black people that are employed by him, and it's bringing up the whole issue of the Orthodox Jews, Jewish cemetery that was there, is amazing.
And apparently there was...
In other words, you can't cover any of these things up. Eventually they come out.
Yes. Apparently there was a lawsuit from here's a ghost from the past. Elliot Spitzer, he was Attorney General, did an investigation, and there was a lawsuit. And I guess some of the families that were notified that the graves were being moved, there was evidence that the tombstones were removed, but not the bodies were removed. And then later there was all these children, hundreds of children in the ground that never were was exhumed. Mm-hmm. And they just built right over it. And then according to this employee, when I guess on the edges of this graveyard, maybe from erosion or from construction, bones and stuff were found. And then I guess Stu Leonard's employees were told to put the remains in coffee burlap bags and to put them in the dumpster, according to his, is what the gentleman alleges. But the... It's really shocking, and I don't think many people in Yonkers know all this story. I didn't know it, you know. It's just, this lawsuit
It was so well covered up. It was so well covered up. I couldn't believe it. I remember a rabbi went there. I couldn't believe it. I forgot his name now. He's no longer as a rabbi in Yonkers. Miserable man. one of the ugliest men I've ever met in my life, who happened to be a rabbi. And now he's no longer working in Yonkers. I think he's out in Brooklyn as a scribe. You know, he writes the Bible with ink, with feather and special ink. And Vinyas, I think, is his last name. What a miserable, miserable character. I couldn't believe it.
It was a shame to have a leader allow this to occur, you know, even if the cemetery
had
not been properly maintained, there should have been someone speaking out. This could have been, they could have built around it, you know what I'm saying, or whatever had to be
done. Of course they
could
have.
Properly.
You know who else was involved as well? The Chamber of Commerce, the Yonkers Chamber of Commerce, those people too. They also covered up for the bullshit that was going on. And they knew what was going on because they were somehow instrumental with the Morris brothers and working out that deal.
Yes.
The corruption in this city is so deep and so many people are involved that there are very few people who are really innocent of all the things that have gone on. And yet they make believe that everything is kosher here, and it's not. And we've got to get over the lies and the deceit.
So when you,
you
go
know,
to
I've
Costco
been here
now, is there a
to know
plaque
all
up?
This bullshit.
Were
what?
They able to put this plaque up at the, I guess, the Costco parking lot? Or
yeah, they did.
It
oh,
is
they
there?
Did.
Yeah.
When you go when you go into Costco and you drive in the parking lot, it's like on a higher level.
Yes.
So when you go in there, on the left-hand side, as you enter the place, you'll see a plaque, and that plaque was what was commemorated that particular day when they claimed that all the bodies were exhumed, which they never were.
No,
not all of them were, and that was and the ceremony was to commemorate the plaque, but because of the rain, they all hid out at the corner of the parking lot, you know, instead of being out there as they should have been. And it literally took me 2 hours to get there by car, by bus, it really is really what it was. I was disgusted by it. You know, if I wasn't a civil guy, I would have spit in their face.
Well,
it's
at least people are learning now.
They all
you know,
came by car.
It's maybe something to be learned from the Ukrainians. You know, they fight very hard to keep their traditions alive in Yonkers, even as maybe their population shrinks a little bit. And maybe the Jewish community needs to be a little more vocal and a little what's left of it here in Yonkers and to speak up for, you know, for their heritage or sites or its situations here in Yonkers, because it's
I would
it
agree
easily,
with the
easily be plowed over, and you're pretty soon there's a Costco sitting on top of, and a Home Depot sitting on top of the graves of children, you know. So it's
exactly. Well, the Ukrainians, unfortunately for them, they had this crisis in Ukraine, so they were highlighted by a reality that they had nothing to do with, but. Again, that's part of the insularity of Yonkers. Instead of celebrating the Ukrainian festival as they should have for many, many years, it was always a very internal thing. Oh, it's just ours. We really don't care about anybody else. We don't want anyone to know anything, blah, blah, blah. And they kept everybody unaware of their celebration. And if you were lucky enough, and you could appreciate, you know, Ukrainian heritage. And I can because my father spoke Polish. My father spoke Ukrainian. My father spoke Russian. He spoke German. He spoke many, many languages. I'm in shock of how much he knew. He's all now long gone. But and so I learned a lot of the history of Ukraine and Poland when it was really one country. And so for me, the dancing and the heritage of Ukraine always mattered to me. But I didn't find that it was a very welcoming community, very insular at that time. And from this goes back 20 years. It's changed now, and all for the wrong reasons. You know, it's changed because, unfortunately, Ukraine is under attack.
Yes.
And hopefully they will survive, because it's a wonderful, wonderful culture with good people,
mm-hmm.
hardworking people who haven't had a break in life for over 100 or 200 years. It's amazing.
I think they've had a taste of freedom, so they definitely don't want to go back under an authoritarian system. And that, even with their own recent history before becoming fully mm-hmm. democratic, they had to overthrow kind of like oligarchs. So they overthrew some of their own oligarchs, number one. Number two, they had this taste of freedom. And number three, they've been holding their own and winning, so, and causing an awful lot of damage to the to Putin's forces. So I think it's going to come out well for them in the end. It's going to be a massive rebuilding project once it's over, but I don't see this as being sustainable by the Russians, to be honest. But we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think they can either. It depends on how desperate they become.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just killing people in the Donbass areas. So I don't know what they're going to do.
Yes.
I don't know if Europe knows what to do either.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all trying very desperately. Europe, the United States, everyone's got their hand in and hoping to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fascinating. You know, they discovered oil off the coast of Israel. And
I didn't hear that. Yeah.
This has been going on for a while. It's one of the biggest finds in a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's fascinating is that Israel worked out an agreement with Egypt, and where they ship oil from Israel through Egypt, and from Egypt they have a pipeline that goes, I believe it goes into Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So it really goes into the network of
mm-hmm.
Europe.
Yes.
And originally Israel wanted to create a pipeline through Cyprus. And the Turks got all bent out of shape because they didn't want it to go through Cyprus.
Yes.
Because they wanted it to go through Turkey, because they owned part of Cyprus and the other part was owned by the Greeks. So it became like a whole big to-do. And so at the end, even though they probably all hate Israel because it's a Jewish state, they've got the oil and they're going to be willing to buy it from them. So evidently that's going to be a boon for the Israeli economy. In the meantime, you know, people are starving because they're not getting the oil that they need. And and Europe is on the hook because they need the fuel. It's
unbelievable. My view of this is a lot of it, I know everybody's making it out like the next great recession's about ready to hit. But my view is a little different. I think, one, you keep seeing these horror stories, whether it was N95 masks or chips or baby formula, and they're blips. They're situations that get resolved within a couple of months. But now, of course, with the war and this oil market disrupted, any war disrupts the oil market. But and it is awful, right. Awful high. But one thing, the reason we have inflation here in a lot of Western countries is people keep buying. People have funds. They might not be happy at paying more. They might not be happy at buying the same package and there's, you know, 30% less in a damn package, but they're buying, mm-hmm. they're buying. So the right now, unless I see people stop buying, the economy is very healthy, but it's kind of working out kind of that famous term, irrational exuberance, of where, you know, Tesla is more valuable than you know, an American car maker or something, and they're only producing
mm-hmm.
a few vehicles. And some of these things that have been bid up to stratospheric prices are starting to come to reasonable prices based on their earnings. And I think it's going to, it's not just inflation here, it's inflation all over, but people are buying, and eventually I think it's going to work itself out.
But do they have a choice? I mean, is there a choice?
No,
for
there's
example,
luxury buying. I know people who are going on vacations.
The cost of gasoline is over $5 a gallon.
Yeah, but people are still going on vacations, Hezzy. You talk about hotels where we're covered, it's coming back. I'm not talking about buying basic essentials. I'm talking about people are buying cars at, you know, 30 or 40% of what they're worth. You know what I'm saying? You can't get a car now. People want them, you got to reserve a car to buy it, you know, and there's no negotiating on the price. The price of things have been, there was a lot of pent-up demand and a lot of savings during the pandemic, and people are looking to spend. You know, housing prices have just been going crazy. People are buying houses.
Yeah.
At some point, it's going to settle down and come back down. There's an old famous quote, the cure for inflation is higher prices. Eventually, the prices will get so high that the demand will cut back. But if I didn't see the demand, I would be very worried about the future. But the demand seems to be there, and it's just...
Well, you know why? You know what's driving the demand for housing, for example, is the fact that there's no reason under the sun for anyone to go back to work because they don't need to work at an office in New York City, and they don't need to go to New York City and travel there and have to find parking or to buy a ticket for a Broadway show or even go to a restaurant, because we got the restaurants up here in Westchester County and in Rockland County, and further up you go, you could find a Broadway show that's just as good, possibly even better in a local community where you can get there in a half an hour by car and you can enjoy it. And it's less expensive, and it's just as good. And you don't have to worry about thugs anywhere because it's that sort of a community. So the whole idea of a city like a city like New York will always function. But when you talk like, you know, secondary cities, they may fall apart because there's no value to them. There's no reason you have to go into a secondary level city.
Yes.
Is there a rationale for a Syracuse? Maybe, but probably not, because people are going to say, hey, it's cheaper to move 15 miles away from here, and I can commute to work with Zoom and through the internet and get everything that I want done that way. People don't want to travel. And you know what?
Yes.
And, you know, that's why I remember years ago, I said to myself, why would anybody in their right mind who lives in Yonkers, for example, want to get a job in New York City where it was going to take them an hour to commute in each direction, plus the cost of a commutation ticket or parking, if they're doing it that way. And so it's 1 hour there, it's 1 hour coming back.
Yes.
And what have you gained? So isn't it worthwhile to work in Yonkers, for example, and you don't have to lose 2 hours out of your life commuting?
Yes.
And you could be with your family and your friends or dating or whatever you want to do, and you could do it locally.
Yes.
And you get the shows and you get the restaurants, and if it's not in Yonkers, then it'll be in Scarsdale or in New Rochelle or wherever, or Mount Vernon, wherever you want to go.
Yes.
And it's so close. So that's the beauty of where we are right now in Westchester County. I don't think people are scared even to go to New York. You can get mugged there.
Oh yeah, it's
you can't even get on a goddamn train.
The news out of New York is definitely I think I've been a big deterrent for people, you know, like that, I guess what they used to call the tunnel crowd, you know, people coming from Jersey or from here, that kind of stuff, or from the outer boroughs. But it's something horrific every day. But like I was saying before, I could be wrong. I'll probably, you know, the great crash will probably come, you know, in a month from now. But I'm not happy with the prices, but I'm not worried where people are going to be next January, next March. I think there's an awful lot of work. There's not vacancies all over. You don't go, into downtown Yonkers or there's some on Central Avenue, but I'm sure they'll be, filled up rather rapidly. It just doesn't seem to be. You don't see a whole empty shopping center or something. It's not like Ridge Hill is totally empty or that kind of thing or that way.
No, it's not. It's functioning very well.
Yeah, commerce is taking place. If I don't see commerce and I see high prices, we're in for it. But right now, it's just there was a pandemic. There's some pent up demand. There's a war. There's a lot of issues going on. I just think that it's just going to settle out. There might be a few bumps in the road, and it's not going to be unpleasant with these higher prices.
Well,
I don't enjoy them.
Well,
but,
I hear what you're saying, but my question is, okay, there's the people that are doing well financially. They're okay. I mean, it may be financially a greater burden than it used to be, but it's not the end of the world, as you said. What about the people who are really not getting by and they find it difficult to pay the rent and to buy the food and to do all those things that are necessary that they were able to do maybe 5 years ago, but they haven't been able to do it since?
My assessment is rather callous for people on the lower end because our people are seniors on a fixed income, that kind of thing. Because even in Yonkers before, it's not unheard of as someone spending, having a senior spend maybe half or a little more than half on their living expenses. You know, even sometimes you go to these food lines that you see in Yonkers that have been going on for a decade. People always assume it's the homeless or just people that are mentally ill, but, a lot of them are seniors, that are just on a fixed income, and this helps get through the month. Or a lot, you'll see 30% or so of the people in the lines are just families, especially young families, that are only earning so much, and the food, whether they go there once a week or twice a month or once a month, helps them get by, kind of thing. Because in Yonkers, the rent is so high. When you even you talk about an affordable apartment, it's enough to buy a home in another community. You know what I'm saying? They pay the rent, the mortgage, the taxes, and have a little left over, and the utilities for what some people pay for a small apartment where families are kind of jammed in. But Yonkers is an anomaly, for the whole country. But I think overall, we're not going to see like what we saw in the crash, after the 90s or in 2007. I think it's going to be rough for a couple of years as things work their way out of the system. But it's but who knows? Some of the people are in banking and in charge and on Wall Street are so greedy and just looking for an opportunity to make a money. And who cares what happens to the economy? My assessment could go the other way real quick because it's not like people are going to put the economy over their opportunity to earn a buck.
I don't know which way it's going to go, and I don't think anybody else does. It's very difficult. I find it difficult to comprehend how people can get by because quite often you find that there's a place to get food on a weekly basis. I'm offended, for example, that people in politics use the opportunity to reach out to people in need, and they want to combine their name with the free food, and yet they're not the ones that are putting out the money. It's not their donated money. It's coming from a PepsiCo or it's coming from a major corporation, and people don't know that, so they connect the free food to some politician that makes sure they get out there once a week to do whatever the hell they want and to make believe that, hey, you vote for me, you'll get more food.
And it
really bothers me a great deal.
That's a valid concern that some people, I have heard people say that it looks for maybe some people are trying to earn brownie points as a politician.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, I've ran a food program in Yonkers for, you know, like a year or two. I don't do it currently.
Yes.
But the one thing I could count on was there were certain groups or certain politicians I could call. They could muster some people, and they could get something done. I could call the fire department unit, and they could take food out to seniors that were,
mm-hmm.
you know, were shut in because of the pandemic. I could call up the different politicians and say, like, a David Tublio or something, and he would show up with a
mm-hmm.
few people in the car, and they would make 50 deliveries. And, you know, there is always, you know, taking a selfie, I'm here, I'm delivering this food, or maybe a flyer that talks about this food is being distributed and this person's involved.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just it's kind of the nature of the beast, you know. It's just if you didn't employ some of these people that can get people together, you can't deliver the food, to be honest. It just
mm-hmm.
it'd be nice if there were some community activists. There's a lot of people that would complain about it. You know, I don't want to see the mayor here. I don't want to see a judge here. I don't want to see this council person here. Why is this council person
mm-hmm.
doing this? But you don't see those community activists saying, you know what, I've got six guys, I'm willing to help you. You know, you can call up that community activist, you know, hey, London Reyes, you know, we need to get food to 50 seniors. Do you think you could get some of these AAA All-Stars together to get this out there?
Uh-huh.
Hello, London, are you there? London? Hello? But you know what, if I call up David Tublio and say,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying, or I call up Tasha, or I call up
mm-hmm.
maybe Sinead, they'll get some people, and this food will get delivered. And it won't be a week from
mm-hmm.
now, it won't be 2 weeks from now. It won't be partially delivered. It will be delivered, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If I got a lot of food that was donated and was going to go bad,
yeah.
I could call up Tasha, and she could have this at 220 Yonkers Avenue, setting up a thing within, you know, that next morning or that afternoon, handing out food to
mm-hmm.
people, you know what I'm saying? So there is a thing of when you use politicians, there's going to be a publicity factor on their part because they want people to know what they're doing. And you see the newsletter they put out every day. Here's me, I'm at the Chamber of Commerce. Here's me, I'm at the golf course. Here's me,
uh-huh.
I'm with the vet. Here's me, I'm cutting a ribbon here. Here's me, I'm raising a flag for Portugal, you know, whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the nature of politics. But if you have to get something to some people in Yonkers, you know, rather quickly, and it might take a whole day, I'm sure there are community activists that maybe you could develop a relationship and they could probably get some people together, but it's you
uh-huh.
might spend all your time getting the volunteers together as opposed to these people have active supporters.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going
to
be very
interesting. I don't see anybody running
to
volunteer to deliver the food at this Hispanic church on Alpha Soft Broadway, or I don't see people lining up to be, you know, I don't see these community activists, you know, that are complaining to say, you know what, I could do Chicken Island and I could do it better. I don't see them. It's just
that's what I don't understand. First of all, I would prefer if the church was given the honor of distributing the food at the church
mm-hmm.
where so many
yeah.
people go, and nobody
yeah.
would be averse to going to the church or whatever house of worship is out there, and
mm-hmm.
and they would be comfortable even if they're not religious people.
Yes.
There's a comfort level in knowing that you're there, you feel comforted by the fact that the clergy is there, and
mm-hmm.
They'll listen to you, and at the same time, there's no political connection one
mm-hmm.
way or the other. So,
yes.
you know, it isn't politics. It's a question of being humane.
Yeah.
And
well,
there's
nice
a need.
If,
and,
yeah.
The
nice. Yonkers Committee of Clergy got together and they wanted to run a weekly food distribution, rain, sleet, or snow, or high temperatures in
uh-huh.
Chicken Island. It'd be nice if they wanted to
right.
go and, you know, after this is done, deliver to 90 seniors that can't come, you
uh-huh.
know, because of disabilities, and take three bags each of food to each of these seniors that have been, and then have them pre-pack that ahead of time. But even... actually, the food, most of the food that comes into Yonkers is from a church. There's a church over in White Plains That's they call it missions. They raise $4 million a year out of that congregation. It's just just south of White Plains there, and it's a pretty wealthy congregation and kind of like a Pentecostal type of congregation. They raise all this money. They don't go overseas to do build a water pipe or whatever to evangelize. They give this food, but kind of the situation I was in. They're taking food to Port Chester, Mamaroneck, Yonkers, and in White Plains and a few other places. But to muster all the volunteers that's needed, you kind of got to appeal to the local political structure, because those people can get people, just like they can get people to go out and sign petitions, they can get people to come help distribute the food. And it'd be nice if there were churches that wanted to step up. It'd be nice if there were community activists that love to complain would wanted to step up. It'd be nice if some nonprofit wanted to step up. You know, it'd be nice if Yipe said, you know what, we got all these students, and this would be a great community project for them, and we'll be there once a week every week. But it just doesn't happen. Maybe they would argue we haven't been asked. And maybe it's the easy road. You know, the easy road is to seek out some help from the political structure. But I don't see them say, can I be involved? Can I help? You know, you need some help? You know, YMCA that does it, and I think there's a Bethel church.
There isn't follow-up.
Yeah.
A lot of people just talk is a good game, but they're not doing the heavy lifting.
It's kind of like
very
me. When I'm in the on the Yonkers Newswire, I'm the biggest critic in the world. They're not going to build a statue to me, but they'll build statues to people that actually accomplish things in the community. You know, they actually got things done. You, Hezzy, they're not going to build a statue. You kept things on the level.
Oh, you're right.
But
well,
the statues are going
statue
to go to somebody
me,
else. You know,
sitting at it. Sitting at it.
Yes. You know, they love to give proclamations to each other, you know, that's for that crowd. But for the critics, you're just left on the sidelines hoping to keep things accountable, you know.
That's true. Well, any last words from you? Because I know I can't keep you up forever and ever. Otherwise, we'll be talking for another 3 hours.
No, I appreciate it, Hezzy. Actually, my wife's going to be yelling at me a minute. I promised to take her to religious services, and I got a doctor's appointment, and then I'll eat something. I can't wait to come home and take a nap after all that. So it's
Give your wife my best, and thank you
for
making the time, and just have a good day. All
you
the
too.
Best. Thank you very much.
Take care now.
Brian Harrod, publisher and editor of the Yonkers Newswire, and you could easily look up the address for the website. Go to any search engine. Just simply put in Yonkers Newswire, and you'll get the link. It's really that simple. Very, very interesting. Always a pleasure to talk to Brian Harrod, clued in many ways, and which is really cool. Well, let's look at some of the things that are going on in the world stage. We're talking about so many other things. I guess the thing that's really important, we were talking about Ukraine before, Russia is launching a fresh rocket assault on Kharkiv. Well, it seems a top Ukrainian official says that Russia is striking Kharkiv in an attempt to divert troops from the key Donbas region. So the UK trade secretary is in Dubai urging more Russia sanctions as oligarchs' yachts are being sighted. The United Kingdom's international trade secretary, Anne-Marie Trevelyan, on Thursday called for more countries to join in sanctioning Russia's outrageous, unprovoked, and illegal war in Ukraine. And the secretary made the comments during an interview with the United Arab Emirates. Dubai, the United Arab Emirates financial center, has become a haven for wealthy Russians seeking to protect their assets against seizures by Western nations. Quote, we encourage all countries to stand alongside us in making that very clear and bringing in the sorts of sanctions and limitations to those who choose to support Russian President Vladimir Putin, said Trevelyan. Well, her statement comes as it was reported that the $156 million superyacht Madame Gu, G-U, belonging to billionaire Russian parliamentarian Andrei Skoch, is currently moored at Dubai's Port Rashid, highlighting the tense relationship between the Emirates and Western trading partners. Skoch, who Forbes magazine says is worth $6.6 billion, was first put on U.S. sanctions list in 2018 for his role in government and his, quote, long-standing ties to Russian organized crime groups, including time spent leading one such enterprise. Skoch is also under European Union sanctions. And those satellite images show the 98-meter, which is a 324-foot yacht, has been moored at the Port Rashid since at least March 24. Journalists from news agency Associated Press on Thursday reported the Cayman Islands registered vessel flying an Emirati flag. Well, the United Arab Emirates has welcomed a massive influx of Russian cash as oligarchs bunker private jets and yachts there, as well as buying up luxury hotels and beachfront villas. Well, Ukraine is receiving precision U.S. arms. It seems that Ukraine Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov on Thursday said that his country had just received a shipment of high-tech U.S. arms. HIMARS, H-I-M-A-R-S, or because that's a plural, have arrived in Ukraine. And thank you to my colleague and friend at Secretary of Defense, Lloyd J. Austin III, for these powerful tools. Summer will be hot for Russian occupiers and the last one for some of them, he wrote on Twitter. That's what Oleksiy Reznikov had said. Well, high-mobility artillery rocket systems, the HIMARS, are light, truck-mounted, multiple rocket launchers with a range of 299 miles. These weapons have greater range and precision than howitzers, which have also been supplied by the United States and NATO allies. Kyiv has been pleading for Western partners to supply it with more advanced weaponry as the country seeks to fend off Russian invaders. Thus far, it has only received a fraction of the weapons it has asked for since neighboring Russia attacked Ukraine on February 24. Well, U.S. sportswear giant Nike on Thursday announced that it would permanently withdraw its business from the Russian market in opposition to Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Nike, which had temporarily halted its business in Russia on March 3rd, says its website and apps will also be pulled from the market. Nike, Inc. made a decision to leave the Russian market. The Nike stores were temporarily closed recently and will not reopen, the Oregon-based company said in a statement. Last month, the company announced that it would not renew licensing contracts with Russian retailers. The company's move was largely symbolic in light of the fact that sales in Russia and Ukraine make up less than 1% of its revenue. Nevertheless, Nike joined a growing number of Western businesses such as McDonald's, Starbucks, and Google that have withdrawn from Russia as a result of its February 24 invasion of neighboring Ukraine. Well, the Russian military has taken more territory in eastern Ukraine as Moscow focuses its invasion on the industrial Donbas region, where Russian-backed separatists have already been fighting the Kyiv government since 2014. Ukraine's general staff said Russian forces have taken over the villages of Loskutivka and Rai Oleksandrivka and were trying to capture Sirotin outside Severodonetsk, the administrative center of the Luhansk region. The Russian forces are also attacking Lyshansk, which is located southwest of Severodonetsk across the Siversky Donets River. Well, the enemy is burning everything out in a bid to encircle Ukrainian group of forces. Sihi Haidai, the governor of the Luhansk region, where Severodonetsk is located, told the Associated Press. Well, the Russians are advancing without trying to spare the ammunition or troops, and they aren't running out of either, Haddai said. They have an edge in heavy artillery and the number of troops. United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense said on Thursday that Russian forces have likely advanced more than 5 kilometers, that's about 3 miles, toward Luhansk since Sunday. In Donbass, Russian forces currently hold almost the entire Luhansk region and about 50% of the neighboring Donetsk region. Well, a parliamentary hearing in the trial of a Russian soldier accused of raping a Ukrainian woman after murdering her husband is expected to take place in absentia in Ukraine today. The crimes in which a second Russian soldier was also involved are alleged to have taken place in the Kyiv capital region on March 9. Well, Ukraine says it is investigating thousands of potential war crimes committed during the Russian invasion, which began on February 24. Well, Moscow has denied all allegations that its troops may have committed war crimes. Well, it seems so far 152 cultural and historic heritage sites in Ukraine have been fully or partially destroyed. Since Russia began its invasion on February 24, experts from the United Nations Cultural Agency, UNESCO, had said, among the damaged or destroyed sites are museums and monuments, churches and other religious buildings, and libraries and other exceptional buildings, UNESCO said in an updated assessment on Thursday. Russian troops or officials who are found to have knowingly damaged Ukraine heritage sites could be prosecuted under international law, UNESCO warned. Both Russia and Ukraine are signatory to the 1954 Hague Convention on Culture in Armed Conflicts, which aims to prevent cultural assets being the target of military actions. Well, there is an appeal against the death sentence for non-Ukrainian fighters in preparation, so says TASS. Well, lawyers for 2 British citizens and 1 Moroccan who have been sentenced to death by a court in the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, the DPR, after being captured while fighting for Ukraine, are preparing to appeal, Russia's TASS news agency said on Thursday. The 3 men were convicted of mercenary activities and committing actions aimed at seizing power and overthrowing the constitutional order of the DPR, the Donetsk People's Republic. Well, the men's families deny that the trio, who were contracted to the Ukrainian armed forces, were mercenaries. As members of a regular army, they would be protected under the Geneva Convention. Well, 12 European Union states are affected by Russian cuts to gas supply, climate policy chief has said. It seems that a dozen European Union member states have suffered reductions in gas supply from Russia, according to Frans Timmermans, the bloc's climate chief policymaker. He said 10 countries had issued an early warning on gas supply, the first in the 3 levels of crisis laid out in European Union regulations on security of supply. On Thursday, Germany moved to the 2nd alarm level of its emergency plan. All European Union member states are required to have such a 3-stage plan. Germany entered phase 2 of an emergency gas plan. It seems that Germany's minister, Robert Habeck, on Thursday announced that the country will enter the alarm level of its 3-stage emergency gas plan. The move to phase 2 of the plan comes amid the threat that Russia, Germany's top gas supplier, could stop supplying the fuel amid tensions over Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. In phase 2, utilities are theoretically permitted to pass on high prices to customers, thus helping lower demand in a bid to prevent low-term supply shortages. However, this would not happen automatically, requiring the official say-so of the federal network agency, the Bundesnetzagentur, which is the regulatory authority for gas and electricity. Bundes is the government, Netz is the gas and gas and electricity, and Agentur is the agent. So the move to phase 2 is also a prerequisite for approval of the government's plan to revive coal-fired electricity plants in a bid to avoid using gas for electricity production. Russia on Thursday again denied that the reduction in the gas supply to Germany was in retaliation for Berlin's opposition to Moscow's invasion of Ukraine, calling such complaints strange and saying that the drop in flow was down to technical reasons. If a turbine needs to be serviced or returned to its place after repairs, but it's not returned, everything is clear. Here, there is no double meaning, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters. Peskov said that Russia remained a reliable supplier of natural gas. In a video address released early on Thursday, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused invading Russian forces of wanting to completely destroy the eastern Donbas region and called once more for faster arms delivery to help repel their attack. We must free our land and achieve victory, but more quickly, a lot more quickly, Zelensky said. There were massive air and artillery strikes in Donbas. The occupiers' goal here is unchanged. They want to destroy the entire Donbas step by step, he said. And this is why we again and again emphasize the acceleration of arms deliveries to Ukraine. What is quickly needed is parity on the battlefield in order to halt this diabolical armada and push it beyond Ukraine's borders. While Russian forces are pressuring the Luhansk, Severodonetsk pocket, the United Kingdom Ministry of Defense said, invading Russian forces have highly likely advanced more than 3 miles toward the southern outskirts of the Ukrainian city of Luhansk in the eastern Donbas region since June 19, according to a UK military intelligence update. The advance comes as the Russian military steps up pressure on the Luhansk Severodonetsk area, it says. However, its effort to achieve a deeper encirclement to make Western Donetsk Oblast remain stalled, says the update. It attributed Russia's higher success in the region to, quote, recent unit reinforcements and heavy concentration of fire. The update says that some Ukrainian units have pulled out, probably for fear of becoming surrounded. Well, the Czech prime minister says that Russia is waging an economic war on Europe. Czech Prime Minister Petr Fiala said that Russia is launching an economic war on Ukraine, on Europe, according to the German news agency DPA. In a televised address, Fiala said that Russia could soon cut off Europe's gas supply. He said that the Kremlin's goal is to destabilize democratic states. Fiala announced a plan to wean the Czech Republic off Russian gas over a five-year period during the speech. The plan includes bringing critical Czech power plants under the control of China. Xi says that the war sounded an alarm for humanity. Chinese President Xi Jinping on Wednesday characterized Russia's war on Ukraine as having sounded an alarm for humanity, end quote, according to the state-run Xinhua news agency. The Ukraine crisis has sounded the alarm for humanity, she said at the virtual business forum of the BRICS nations, the BRICS nations, and countries will surely end up in security hardships if they place blind faith in their positions of strength, expand military alliances, and seek their own safety at the expense of others. She also said that sanctions on Russia could be a double-edged sword. The European Union has previously criticized China for having an ambiguous position on the war. But Russia strikes Kharkiv in possible diversion attempts. It seems that Russia has launched fresh rocket attacks on the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv in recent days, signaling a possible shift in tactics by Moscow. Ukraine said at least 20 people were killed on Tuesday and Wednesday in the country's second largest city, which lies near the Russian border. Well, Ukrainian presidential advisor Oleksiy Arestovych said in a video address that the aim of the strikes is to terrorize the population and quote of the city. He also claimed the attacks are an attempt by Russia to divert Ukrainian troops from the key Donbas region. And the idea is to create one big problem, to distract us and force us to divert troops, Arestovych had said. I think there will be an escalation. where the G7 and NATO nations are going to discuss new punitive measures on Russia. Leaders attending the upcoming G7 and the NATO summits in Europe will discuss new proposals to pressure Russia and its ongoing assault on Ukraine. We will roll out a concrete set of proposals to increase pressure on Russia, a senior U.S. official said and told reporters. U.S. President Joe Biden will attend the G7 summit in the German region of Bavaria this weekend, along with the leaders of the United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Italy, and Japan. Biden will later attend the NATO summit in Madrid on the next leg of his European tour, calling European leaders ahead of the European Union candidacy status decision. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky spoke with 11 European leaders ahead of a key decision on granting the country European Union candidate status. Zelensky said he spoke with the leaders of Belgium, Austria, Greece, and the Czech Republic, among others. He also spoke with President Maia Sandu of Moldova, another Eastern European nation aspiring to candidate status. Tomorrow, I will continue this marathon. We must provide maximum support to our state, Zelensky said. We expect a key European decision tomorrow night. What happened in Russia's war on Ukraine on Wednesday? Well, during an address to the Bundestag, the lower house of the German parliament, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said Ukraine needs a massive amount of aid to rebuild, calling it a task of generations, quote unquote. He also said that NATO allies can rely on Berlin. At the same time, Scholz said it would be unwise for NATO to pull out of a 1997 agreement that bolsters cooperation between the alliance and Russia. The German leader said such a move would feed into Kremlin narratives. Meanwhile, Ukraine's ambassador to Berlin, Andriy Melnyk, expressed regret for calling Scholz the equivalent of a snowflake in May. The Ukrainian envoy said he will apologize to Scholz personally. Tech giant Microsoft said that Russian state-sponsored hackers launched attacks on 42 countries outside Ukraine since the beginning of the invasion on February 24. A Kremlin spokesperson, Dmitry Peskov, fumed over illegal European Union sanctions, which led to Lithuania imposing a rail blockade on goods to the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad. Peskov said Russia is in the process of preparing retaliatory measures. Russian President Vladimir Putin said that Moscow is redirecting its exports to the BRICS nations amid Western sanctions. BRICS includes Brazil, India, China, and South Africa. Luhansk Regional Governor Serhiy Hadai said that the situation in the eastern Ukrainian city of Severodonetsk is hell, quote unquote, amid weeks of heavy Russian attacks. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged more sanctions on Moscow amid entrenched fighting in the Donbas. And Reporters Without Borders, the RSF, said a Ukrainian journalist and a soldier accompanying him were coldly executed by Russian forces near Kyiv in March. So that's what's going on. Unbelievable. So that's the story for us. And that'll be our time with you today. Not quite sure exactly what's going on for tomorrow. Let me look at the calendar, if I may. Bear with me a moment. Well, tomorrow is Friday, so we probably will be able to speak to Assembly Member Nader Steyer, who represents District 90 in Yonkers. We'll find out later. So we'll advise you on the website in case you have the time to tune in tomorrow or to listen over the weekend or any time because he's on Fridays. So he would be on, if he's on tomorrow, he'll be on from 10 in the morning till 11, or we'll find out exactly. But again, that'll be posted on the website. So I think that we've covered everything we can, and there we go. So have a great day, and thank you for waiting. Goodbye.